Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Today, we are joined by Icelandic football expert Sherva, who joins us from his country. And today, we are going to be talking about Icelandic football with a focus on Juan Camilo Perez's upcoming transfer to top division side Breiðablik, who narrowly missed out on the title this season and have huge expectations and ambitions for 2022. Sherva, thank you very much for joining us. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm very good. It's probably a little bit different weather over here, but I'm still good.
Yeah, Caracas today is around, it's 10:40 a.m. at the time of recording, and it's already 25 degrees. I've been here 4 months now, and it's like an English summer every day. Barely seems to rain, and if it does, it passes within an hour. I've not needed a jumper at all. But I'm going to be in Iceland at the beginning of January for a few days. So I am ready for the culture shock, the weather shock.
Yeah, this is outside now. There's snow.
Everything is white. Everything is white.
Everything's white.
And for listeners that before we get into the football, for listeners that maybe don't know too much about Iceland, one thing people do know is, and maybe it's not entirely correct, but one thing a lot of people think about Iceland is, at part of your year, the sun doesn't go down for quite a while, like a matter of days or weeks. And at other times of the year, it's darkness for quite a while.
I think that's why, like Juan Camilo, it would be terrible for him to come into Iceland too early, because I don't think a kid like that could handle the Icelandic winter. So I say the later he comes, the better, because this is no place for a kid from Venezuela in December or January. It's dark all day.
Okay, so when you say it's dark all day, like literally the sun doesn't rise, and how long does that continue for?
Well, it does rise, as you could see. It's dark here, but it's dark at like 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Like the sun comes up at 11 or something. So it is quite dark here during the winters, but it's super bright during the summer. And I'm sure he's going to love it during the summertime.
And is it true that in the summer, the sun is like always in the sky?
Yeah, it's the Arctic sun. Yeah.
How long does that continue for? How much of the year?
Well, I know a lot about football, but very limited on these terms. And I especially don't want to be recorded on that because...
Okay. No problem. Okay, so let's get into the main reason we're here, which is, of course, to discuss Icelandic football. And really what I'd love to do today is to essentially educate our listeners on Icelandic football. Many of our listeners are, if not Venezuelan football fans, South American football fans, and perhaps interests don't overlap with Scandinavian football or Icelandic football more specifically. So I'd really love for us to be able to counter and challenge perhaps the misconception or outdated perception that Icelandic football doesn't have a high level, because obviously we saw Iceland get a great result over England in Euro 2016 and obviously participate in Euro 2016 and then make World Cup 2018 and get some good results there. And of course, a national team can't perform like that if there aren't good things going on in the country's football and in the league. So what can you tell us about Icelandic football and its progress in recent years?
Well, it's obviously been great during the last 10 years. The national team especially. Obviously the Euros, where we won Austria and defeated England. We went to the World Cup in Russia. We actually drew Argentina. So, I mean, just as a comparison, I mean, you know, you're playing in your Mickey Mouse carnival in South America, and Venezuela has never made it to the World Cup. And you can imagine how much more difficult it is to qualify through Europe. So if there's any disrespect from Venezuelan part, you know, that's just funny, because we have been, you have never been to the World Cup, right?
No, that's correct. Never been to a World Cup.
Yeah. So, I mean, I rest my case.
And Venezuela won't be going, sadly, to Qatar 2022, barring an absolute miracle. The early World Cup, perhaps. We Venezuela national team have just appointed Jose Pekerman, the Argentine manager that in charge of their youth team, taking Colombia to World Cups, for example. So there's now a new, you know, 4-year plan for 2026. But when the Juan Camilo Perez transfer was announced to Breda Blick, joining in January, course there was intrigue. He's not the first Venezuelan to play in Iceland's top flight. That was Octavio Paez with Leikner last season. But play for a club of Breda Blick's size and history, it's a considerable new move, particularly because Juan Camilo Perez will hopefully get exposure to European continental football in the first year, having the club qualified for the UEFA Conference League. So what can you tell us about the standard of the Icelandic league and the style of football that the league has in general? Obviously, every team will play, have their own identity, but the league as a whole, how is it viewed by its fans and the style of play that occurs?
Well, you know, unfortunately, our league has been dropping in standards over the last few years. We've lost the European place. There used to be 4 places going to Iceland, but there are only 3 at the moment. But Breiðablik is very different to other Icelandic teams, the way they play and so on. And you talked about Breiðablik's history. They actually have no history, really. They've just been good for the last, I would say, 15 years. Mm-hmm. They played their first European game in 2010, I think. And they've only won the championship once, but they play the most fascinating football in the Icelandic league. They scored by far the most goals the last year. I think 17 goals more than the team that finished on top, Víkingur. So, I mean, that's a lot in 22 games. Mm-hmm. So, and they do this high pressing. They have good ball position. And you can see their results in Europe was quite admirable. I mean, they knocked out Austria Wien. From Austria, out of the Conference League, and they defeated a team from Luxembourg, and they actually went toe to toe with Aberdeen from Scotland. Mm-hmm. But kind of funny, also kind of sad to say that the Breivik team actually lost that tie on physique. You know, the Scots were just professionals who are much better physical. I mean, that used to be our trait, being very physical, but we seem to have lost that a little bit.
And one comparison that could potentially be made from the Venezuelan, the Icelandic league is perhaps how it's viewed from outsiders, either through ignorance, literally just not knowing the quality or the infrastructure that the league does or doesn't have, and therefore just looking down on it. Why has Iceland traditionally had been the victim of that perception?
I wouldn't call it a victim of anything. I mean, this is only a small place of 370,000 people. So, you know, the money involved in football here is quite limited. I mean, I think a good budget for a football team in Iceland for a year is with all salaries and everything is like, very good, 1.3 million euros. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, you know how football works. The more money you spend, the likelier you are to succeed. The higher budget you have, the more, you know, if you look at the league table everywhere in the world, it's pretty much the budget that says what's going on. It's no coincidence that Manchester City are now doing well in Champions League and Premier League and so on. I mean, it's money related. So obviously, but it's nice to see what Breiðablik are doing, Valur are doing, KR, which is our most successful football club. They have been trying to pump it up a little bit over the last few years, but obviously it's difficult for us to progress into the group stages in Europe, but we will get there soon. I think so.
And I saw on social media, I can't remember who said it or where I read it, but on one of your recent podcast episodes, you mentioned Juan Camilo Perez's upcoming transfer to Breda Blick. Obviously, we wouldn't have heard that, and our listeners wouldn't have heard that. So what's your thoughts and feelings, or perhaps what's been the reception to the news in Iceland about this transfer?
Well, you know, the first information we got about the player was quite, I think we've got all the wrong informations, because we were told it was a forward player, and we looked at his record and there were no goals there. So we were like, okay, that's a very exciting forward with no goals. But then we got to know that he seems to be very versatile, playing as left back, left wing, or sometimes as a number 10. He's very creative and so on. I mean, I can't say, apart from some YouTube stuff I've seen, so I can't say a thing about the kid, because I need to see him play here. You know, the South Americans who played for Leiknir last year, they struggled a little bit. We have had Brazilians coming over here, you know, but this guy seems to have some sort of a record in the league. So he's played many games and he's been, so I mean, tell me about him. How good is this guy?
I personally really like him. I'll put a caveat on that of he's essentially a left-sided player and left-footed like myself. So yeah. I immediately like to try and see myself in a player like that and think, oh yeah, you know, if I was better, that would have been me kind of thing. So yeah. Caveat that I have a bias for left-footed left wingers. And we're getting fewer and fewer of them at the top level of football. So many clubs now play with inverted wingers. And even if they don't play as inverted wingers, they're playing right-footed players on the left and et cetera. Juan Camilo Perez was first and foremost a 10, very South American 10 as well in terms of his technique and his creativity. But when he was younger, which is, I guess, probably the case around the world, when players make their debut in the first team at a young age, particularly if they're an attacking player, they get shoved out to the wings. And Camilo Perez played a lot of his early football at left wing. He won the Venezuelan under 20 league title twice with Atletico Venezuela. Atletico Venezuela at the time, their scouting was very good and their recruitment and sell-on process was very good. Yangel Herrera, who is owned by Manchester City, currently on loan at Espanyol, he left Venezuela via Atletico Venezuela. Christian Cáceres Jr., who's now at New York Red Bulls, also spent time at Atletico Venezuela. And Dani Perez, the striker at Club Bruges, albeit a lot shorter time, was also there. Juan Camilo Perez's generation, like I said, two back-to-back under 20 league titles, played in the under 20 Libertadores. That's the point at which Juan Camilo Perez left Atletico Venezuela and went to Deportivo La Guaira, and then made his debut in the senior Copa Libertadores the following year. He then had a season or two in the Venezuelan second division, which was then also hampered by COVID. And then at the beginning of the season, Carabobo, who in 2019 came close to winning the Venezuelan league, they were one of the top clubs. They had a complete refresh. Their 2020 was terrible. They finished the season without a single win. So at the beginning of 2021, they brought in a lot of new young players and a new young head coach. And this head coach brought a lot of the players with him that he'd managed at Atletico Venezuela at youth level. And some of those players were Juan Camilo Perez and Yangel Montero, who is a number 9, 22 years old, 23 this month, like Juan Camilo Perez. One thing that defined Carabobo's team this season, as well as being young, is that they played, or a number of their players, because it wasn't a team effort at times, played very high-pressure football and very intense. Right. Juan Camilo Perez was probably the trademark player in the team for that. I know one of the players very well at Carabobo, and he said, you know, if every player pressed, like Juan Camilo Perez pressed, we would have qualified for the final stages. He's got a very good engine. His intensity, he's not just a headless chicken. He presses intelligently. He's an intelligent guy as well. He'd started university here in Venezuela before his football career really took over. So he stopped after a semester. He already has basic English. He understands a lot more than he can speak, but it's like he's coming to Iceland with no English at all. And I'm really excited. The versatility, I think sometimes that hampers players because coaches or fans can say, well, what's his actual position like? But Juan Camilo Perez is genuinely as good at left back as he is in the midfield. Statistically, he was one of the highest, if not in the first stage of the season, had the highest number of successful tackles with a very high success rate as well. And at the same time, he had the highest number of successful dribbles in the league with a very high success rate as well, 81%, which was for players under 23 and across the whole of the Americas. He was right up there at the top. Obviously, contextually, he's playing in Venezuela and other players are playing in Argentina and Brazil, but his success rate, it really, really stands out. I'm excited to see how Oscar, the head coach of Breda Blick, is going to use him, because he sees his versatility as a big plus, and also sees his natural strengths, which is his high intensity and his creativity, as a plus too.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds very much like an Oscar player. Oscar, the coach of Breda Blick, is a very interesting man. He is a former journalist. He went out to set up some British website with an Icelandic billionaire in London a few years ago. He quit there and he got bitten by the coach bug. He just, like, all of a sudden his mind was all in coaching, and all of, you know, he was telling me about Roger Schmidt from Leverkusen, or he was talking about what they're doing at Köln or what they're doing over there and there. And you could hear, like, he was getting more interested all the time. And at that time, I was a goalkeeper coach at the other club in Kópavog, where Breiðablik is. And he would know everything about our players. And I had never met somebody like that. And for him to find a player in Venezuela, he, if I know Oscar right, he has seen more games with that kid than you have. Like, he is very...
From talking to him, I've been so impressed, not just by him, but the club in general, like their thoroughness with their due diligence. Yeah. And when Oscar decided he wanted to sign Juan Camilo Perez, he was like a dog with a bone. He would not let it go. He's like, we need this player. And I'm excited for next season, because I know that they've, you know, I expect that Juan Camilo Perez won't be their only foreign recruit. I'm really, really intrigued to see how it goes, because knowing how close they were to the league title last season, and obviously forming at the last qualifying stage to Aberdeen before group stages, I know Oscar's fixated on getting the necessary added quality to just take that one final step to get to the group stages.
Yeah, that's correct. But he is an obsessive guy. I mean, he is not coaching Breiðablik like they are an amateur side. They are training like a full-time professional squad, I'm sure he will be impressed by the level of standards during training and the facilities and so on at Breiðablik. Oscar plays this high-pressing football. Very gutsy football, if you like. He took a club in Iceland that has never done anything, and he took them from C level to A level in 2 years. That's Grótta, club that has never done anything in Icelandic football, but he all of a sudden got people talking about Grótta, and then he got this Breiðablik job, which is, I would say, one of the biggest jobs here in Iceland. And I'm sure he's going to be a successful coach, but he has this obsessive behavior. Like, he is, I've read this about the Argentinian coach Carlos Bilardo. He would eat, sleep, drink football all day long, and Oscar is pretty much that way. And I'm sure he will do well. But the interesting thing for me was the transfer fee involved in getting this Juan Camilo, or was it the free transfer, or
a free transfer? So firstly, he's out of contract at the end of this month, December. He's turning 23 before the end of his contract. Similarly, there's no youth formation rights to pay, so it's complete transfer.
I wouldn't be surprised if Oscar found him himself, but is there some agent who engineered this move, or what's the mechanism behind him going to Iceland? Was it just Oscar looking at Y Scout and looking at reports, or was it somebody who pushed him to Breiðablik?
I think Oscar was already aware of Juan Camilo Perez.
Sorry to interrupt you, but imagine that. What does that tell you about this guy? I mean, knowing about some guy in Venezuela and thinks he would suit Breiðablik.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, you know, who is looking at players from Venezuela for Icelandic football?
Yeah. I guess maybe Octavio Paez, although he didn't feature much at all. He had just under 400 minutes at Leipzig last season, and obviously
he didn't do anything.
Yeah. But I know he was highly thought of like at the training ground, and that he was like a good guy and a good professional. And I just know that I work for an agency based in the United States. And have obviously contacts with agents here in Venezuela. And Juan Camilo Perez is signed to an agency called IST, International Sports Traders. The president of that agency, Karim Asafo, a Venezuelan guy, he was the former general manager of Caracas and the former general manager of Deportivo Táchira. Not only are they the fiercest rivals in the country, but also they're the two biggest clubs. So this agency is run by a guy with a strong Venezuelan football background. I don't know how it came about, but the initial contact was from Breiðablik and myself asking about Juan Camilo Perez. They already knew the name. And then it
came from there. I think that must tell you a lot about how our Oscar works. I mean, I can't name another Icelandic coach who would find a Venezuelan player. Normally, Iceland, you know, scouting in Iceland is complete shit. It's been like that for many years. You just like, you know, imagine there's a Danish guy walking around downtown. He can call teams and get to go to practices or something. You know what I mean? I mean, there has been very limited data behind scouting for players in Iceland. So this is a very welcome change that we are starting to do things properly.
And do you think maybe if Juan Camilo Perez comes in and has the instant success that Oscar's hoping for, that this could lead to Venezuela to Iceland being a regular player pathway? Do you think a Breiðablik as a club trendsetters in that way, and the clubs tend to copy other clubs' recruitment? Like if a player from France came in and did really well, would the other clubs end up, sign?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we take it into something like, you remember when Arsene Wenger came to Arsenal and all these French players started floating over England, and Rafa Benitez got the Spaniards to come over, and I know what you mean. You know, it needs to be proved to me that South Americans can adapt to the Icelandic way of living. I mean, the league itself is not, you know, not good, but however, it's quite physical. So, and just life in general here in Iceland. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he does. And also, you know, when I think Venezuelan football, I don't know all that many Venezuelans, you know. The only guy I see week in, week out is Salomon Rondon.
Yeah.
So I mean, for me to judge how Venezuelan footballers are going to do in Iceland, well, I see them at Copa America here and there and so something, but for me, it's extremely difficult to cast something on, like, yes, it's going to be a success or not. I mean, I think it's quite of a gamble. I mean, you know how much they're paying for him in wages? How much would you guess?
I wouldn't know.
No.
I know is that they don't have the biggest budget in the league, but they have one of the bigger budgets in the league.
Yeah, I would say I think Breiðablik was the second biggest budget in the league from last year. I mean, they offloaded a very expensive player called Thomas Mikkelsen, who was an absolute gold machine here in Iceland. But Oscar didn't think, even though he was like his root Van Nistelrooy, he didn't think he suited his game because he wasn't working hard enough.
That's one thing I've learned from talking to Oscar multiple times. That I think, like, for example, you know, that they are looking for a striker probably to replace this very guy. And you know, I've suggested some players for him to take a look at, and he's either already heard of them and done his research, or if he hasn't, he'll look. And this could be a striker that I'd be convinced would do well in Iceland. And sometimes Oscar even says, or words to the effect of, yeah, this guy would do good in Iceland, but he's not right for us. He's very, very specific. It has to be the perfect player for his system.
Yeah, it's that's very much like Oscar. I mean, he has found some absolute bargains on the Icelandic market. He's done really well in that. He is a bit like a sport director and a coach in one job. So, you know, again, it just underlines his mentality. Is you're telling him about some random Venezuelan footballers, and he says, "Yeah, I know that guy."
Yeah, and some of them haven't even been Venezuelan. They've just been from CONCACAF, for example.
Yeah. I mean, I have this guy from El Salvador, you know. Yeah, I know him. Yeah.
Well, something else I found is interesting is, as much as Oscar's obviously got this really respected reputation, but from my research and from information that, you know, was just given to me on Breiðablik, it looks like their impressive transfer record actually predates Oscar's arrival. They've been selling players to clubs in Serie A, to Eredivisie, even to England and other bigger leagues in Scandinavia prior to Oscar. How did Breiðablik have such an impressive record? Because a lot of these players are young as well.
Yeah. They obviously have the most participants. They have very large age groups in Kobor. And so I mean, let's say age group 11 and 12, they got 200 kids training. But Breiðablik has somehow managed to create a culture of, you know, kids who want to succeed, who want to, like, go a step further. I mean, they've sent so many players out and so many have failed. But you have these exceptional talents that have done well. And, you know, they also have this player in Midtjylland now, the goalkeeper. They have a player in Bodø/Glimt, which is the best team in Norway. So they've done well in recent years creating talents. So no doubt about that.
Yeah, what would be interesting for me is obviously a Venezuelan football fan is whether they can replicate that export that export success for the foreigner, because obviously the vast majority, if not all, of their foreign exports have been Icelandic players.
Yeah. How old is Juan Camilo?
He's going to be 23 by the time your season starts.
Yeah, I remember Breiðablik had a player from America called Robbie Russell 20 years ago. He went on to play for Rosenborg, American midfielder.
Okay.
So they have at least managed to get something. They had a New Zealand defender from New Zealand called Jay Burns. He played somewhere in England or something after Breiðablik. But I mean, if Juan Camilo does well in Iceland, you know, Danish teams will have a look at him, or Swedish Superettan, or Allsvenskan, or something. I mean, if he does well here in Iceland, and they see he's above our level, then you know, I would just expect him to go to Scandinavia or something like that. I mean, and then we have this whole new market here in Iceland, which happens to be Serie B in Italy. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, we are growing players to Italy all the time now, and nobody knows why, but it's fun.
And to circle back to...
Look at the squads in Italy now, and go to Vicenza and go to some of the Pisa or Bologna and look at the youth teams and so on, and you're going to find so many Icelandic names that you will be like, wow, what's going on?
I'd hazard, if nobody knows, I'd hazard a guess that could be way off. But with Iceland having the success that they did in 2016 with the Euros and 2018 with the World Cup, I wouldn't be surprised if it was just a few wily scouts thinking, you know, take a punt on Iceland's next youth generation. At the moment, you've got quite a strong generation of strikers that all seem to be defined by being the sons of former Icelandic national team players and are all tall. You've got the sons of Ida Gudjonsson, Oscar's son himself, for under-19s at Copenhagen. And they all look pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things also with Icelandic footballers is they have a great attitude. They really want to succeed in this game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they do get interest from a professional foreign club, they will go. The Icelandic teams will not stop them.
Yeah.
You know, Icelandic parents find a way to get them out of contracts or, you know, negotiate somehow that they can go to Bologna or go to the team that wants them.
Yeah.
It's parents in Iceland always, if somebody has an interest in their kid, they behave like the last plane out of Iceland is about to leave.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the Icelandic mentality.
Yeah, and another thing I've learned on, you know, researching around and having conversations about Icelandic football is it seems that like one or maybe two agencies control about 80% of the market. So in terms of variation of different players.
That's a fantastic point. I mean, we have a super agent in Iceland called Magnus Agnar. He's the guy who's moving all these players to FC Kaun now. Mm-hmm. Like FC Copenhagen, which is the biggest club in Scandinavia.
Yeah.
And he and Bjarki Gunnlaugsson, the twin brother of the title-winning coach, Arnar Gunnlaugsson, the Víkingur coach,
okay. They
are together with this company called Stellar Nordic.
Yeah.
And they have the bulk of the players. And then there are like two or three other agents. But those two are, you know, one of them is on the continent, you know, taking care of his players while the other one operates from here.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I would say 75% of the Icelandic national teams is made up of players from them.
Okay. And to circle back to something we spoke about earlier, when you were talking about Oscar, you mentioned this team in the second division, Grota, who stood out to me for a few different reasons. Firstly, and perhaps most relevant to me, is their head coach is a young English guy, newly appointed, but has had a number of years at the club. Secondly, that a few previous coaches of Grota, Oscar being one of them, are now head coaches in the top flight for top division clubs. And also they too have moved a couple of players overseas, you know, almost bypassing the top division of Iceland. For example, in Venezuela, and I'd say in England too, it's more normal for a player to move up to the top division before then moving abroad. And similarly, Grota have managed to bypass this on one or two occasions. And what's interesting for me about Grota is, like I said, the English coach, Chris from Norwich, is they too have been scouting the Venezuelan market, which is, you know, absolutely fascinating for a second division team in Iceland.
And are they bringing some Venezuelans to Grota now?
They're assessing Venezuelans. They haven't decided anything. But one thing that they have decided is they're having a 21-year-old English striker called Warden, who's currently scoring at an incredibly prolific rate in the US college soccer divisions. He's about to graduate, about to finish his university course in the US. And he played his youth football in England at Tottenham Hotspur when he was young, and then Southend. And then at the age of 16, he decided he wanted to go to the States and get his education there, but obviously continue playing football. And the US college soccer scene can be very strong. Jack Harrison, I think, is one example of coming through like the school system.
Yeah.
Club system. And so, in January, they're having a young English striker, 21 years old, on trial. It's fascinating.
If you would have told me 5 years ago that I would be speaking to a Venezuelan reporter about Grota, I would put you on a drug test, because nobody in Iceland related Grota to football 5 years ago. It was just a Mickey Mouse club. But they've done really well. They went to the top league, failed there, but it's so nice to hear about their ambition. And it's fascinating to hear about that, because Grota, I mean, it was pretty much nothing of a football club there back a few years ago. But it's so nice to hear that they're so ambitious. the problem in Iceland for me, and I, you know, a lot of people disagree with me, but for me in the Reykjavik area, there are way too many football clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you don't have enough participants behind each club to create a proper football club. Football clubs in Reykjavik should be like 3-4, but we have, I can't remember now how many there are, but there are like 9-10, something like that.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think like that's one of the things that, you know, there are football clubs everywhere, and Grota is right next to KR Reykjavik, the biggest one. So I mean, yeah, there's like this pack of football clubs in Reykjavik.
And I had heard that before, but I heard it in a slightly more like positive intonation.
That, I agree with you.
Embedded in the culture of Iceland. I don't know how many years that's been the case for. But is that the case? Would you say?
I would absolutely for the scene from like 5-year-old to 12-year-olds. It's so positive to have all these clubs and, you know, qualified coaches helping them out and so on. But it's at the something happens at the age of 15, 16. And we seem to not, you know, I've been fortunate enough to watch some Danish young players working and Norwegian and in England as well. And, you know, it is, yeah, we would need more better, more quality players training together.
Mm-hmm.
Because the quality gap between players increases as they get older. And the good players don't get to play with players who are right at their level.
Needs to be so concentrated.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like having a group of 18 boys who are picked out to be in a team, not having like 10 passengers coming to each practice, you know, talking about parties until 10 seconds before training and no concentration or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking like, you know, bringing the best and, you know, having them working together, creating some environment or a culture, if you like.
Okay. I was when I was preparing for this podcast and I was trying to, you know, spot some similarities between Venezuela and Iceland for its football. Two things that stood out for me to ask you about is, firstly, is football now the national sport of Iceland, would you say? Because in Venezuela, it was baseball for a long time. And now half the population will probably tell you it still is. And the other half will tell you it's football. What's the relationship like between football and the population in Iceland?
What was the other sport you said?
Baseball in Venezuela.
Baseball. The population in Venezuela is 30 million people.
Yes. Yeah.
So we have nothing in common with Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Not the weather, not the population, not the economy. We are very rich. So we, you know, everything is so different. But obviously, football is by far the biggest sport here.
Mm-hmm.
By far. And
has that always been the case?
Pretty much, yeah. We have, you know, that has always been the case. I mean, we've always had a very successful handball team.
Mm-hmm.
You know this sport?
Yeah.
Handball. Yeah.
There's a growing number of football teams playing handball as a training exercise. I'm finding that curious.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say it's a good exercise for footballing players, so tell them to stop doing that.
Okay.
But, yeah. Football is the main sport here, and so I think it's very clear.
Okay, and the second thing I was wondering is whether a problem that exists in Venezuelan football exists in Icelandic football, and that is because it's not always been the most traditional sport in the country, and secondly, because the quality, you know, globally comparatively isn't great. A lot of Venezuelan football fans follow clubs from overseas before they follow clubs from home. They're more interested in Barcelona or Real Madrid than they are in Caracas or Deportivo Táchira. And I just wondered, obviously yourself as a journalist and someone that knows Icelandic football very well, what's the fan culture like in Iceland? Do you follow their Icelandic clubs first or second?
You're absolutely spot on. If you ask an Icelandic kid who he supports, he would say Manchester United or Liverpool. Or some other English team. Mm-hmm. English football is closer to our heart, unfortunately. And it's been very difficult to change that. Our relation with English football goes way, way back. And you have to remember that our footballing season was like 3 or 4 months until just recently. So, I mean, we had to have some team to support during the winter while our team was just indoors, you know, running around and lifting weights. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I think we have the similar problem. But, you know, everything is like with your 30 million population, like what's wrong with you guys not having qualified for the World Cup yet?
Well, is that a question you want me to answer or is it hypothetical?
No, I'm just saying like,
yeah.
You must have so much talent there, and
there is. Obviously, yeah. In 2017, the Venezuelan national team reached the World Cup final, the under-20 World Cup final against England. They lost 1-0. There's hugely talented players in that generation. Walker Ferinez, the goalkeeper, is now at Lens in France. Yang, as I mentioned earlier, is owned by Man City and is on loan at Espanyol. Giancarlo, the striker, hasn't fulfilled his potential yet, but he's still a Boca Juniors player on loan at Red Bull Bragantino in Brazil. And Teldo, who was probably the player that instigated my interest in Venezuelan football first and foremost, was at Santos last season, got to the Copa Libertadores final with them, and then went to Toronto in MLS, which was a bit of a strange move, and also hasn't been hugely successful. The club itself have had a bad season, but he's a hugely talented player. But yeah, Venezuela historically, with baseball being the number one sport for so long, their football was a massive afterthought. For example, they didn't win a single game in the Copa America for 40 years. Between 1967 and 2007, they didn't win a single game at the Copa America.
Oh my God.
And between 2001 and 2007, there was a football revolution in Venezuela under Richard Páez, the national team coach. And one thing that happened at the very end of his tenure, which set Venezuela up for progress, is they brought in a rule in 2007 where every starting 11 must have at least one player under the age of 20. And that player has to be replaced by another player under the age of 20.
That's good.
And it's had a measurable impact. And that happened in the men's and the women's game as well. Not that the women's game really needed that rule, because the average age of the professional teams in Venezuela, female football, is very young anyway. But it did have a measurable impact. The women's national team at youth level got to back-to-back World Cup semi-finals. They won the South American Championship at under-17s, undefeated 2 years running. And players of that generation, like Dana Castellanos, who's now at Atletico Madrid, are heralded as just as big a stars as the male players. And that's another thing that I've noticed about Icelandic football. And I don't know if it's across the board in Icelandic football or just the clubs I've happened to see, but it looks like women's football in Iceland is also taken pretty seriously and of quite a decent level.
Yeah, I think we've qualified now for 4 consecutive European finals in the women's game. Breiðablik is obviously a pioneer club in the women's game. They're now in the UEFA Champions League group stages.
Yeah.
Well, where they did really badly. I mean, they got just 1 point. But still, they were playing against Paris Saint-Germain and Real Madrid, so it was quite difficult for them. But that's right. We've done really well in the women's game since we qualified in 2009, I think. So yeah, that's right. We've done well. We have some good players there, and Breiðablik especially. They've created a lot of those players.
And I think it would be a perfect way to wrap up this podcast. We've obviously spoken heavily about Breiðablik because of Juan Camilo Perez, but I hope, on a personal level, that he won't be the only Venezuelan in Iceland next season. Hopefully, maybe one or two more. But what are your predictions? I know you don't really want to give a prediction on Juan Camilo Perez until you've seen him yourself, but what are your predictions for Breda Blick as a team next season? How do you see
them? Well, I can only see Breda getting better next year. I mean, I think they're favourites to win the title, if you would ask me today. Mm-hmm. But we have a club that has a lot of resources in Valur, which is the downtown club in Reykjavik, and they have I wouldn't say unlimited, but they have a good budget. I would say their budget is closer to 2 million euros. So I mean, I you know, even though I have they haven't opened the books for me, but you know, they're somewhere there. So, and they're like almost a professional team. So I would expect Valur to challenge Breda Blik next year. I can't see Víkingur doing it again. So, I think it's between those two, you know, as it stands right now.
Excellent. That will be, I know that Venezuelan football fans, particularly that have followed Juan Camilo Perez's career so far and fans of his current club, Carabobo, will definitely be keeping an eye out. We've got a very good journalist here in Venezuela called Mario Sanchez. He's sort of like Venezuela's Fabrizio Romano. He's always first to the transfers. He was first to Juan Camilo Perez's transfer as well, which shows you the scope of his investigative powers that he could find out about a move to Iceland. But yes, he also tweets all of the results of clubs that have Venezuelan players around the world, so that people will definitely be following. Sherva, thank you very much for joining the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up?
No, I'm just telling you, like, if this guy scores 6 or 7 goals next year and sets up 5 or 6, he doesn't have to play in Iceland for more than a year.
I don't expect he will. It'd be interesting to see if he adds goals to his game. And that is the thing. It would be an because... you know, he's got a good shot and he's a good set piece taker, but you know, as it stands, he doesn't really have goals to his game. I think just one or two in the top level, but assists wise he assists very well and creates a lot of chances.
Come on, man, we don't want a South American coming to our league who can't take free kicks and put it in the top corner.
A left-footed South American on a free kick, that's that'll be a treat for everyone, particularly me.
That should be good. Uh-huh. Sounds pretty good, yeah.
No, thank you so much for joining us.
It was more fun than I thought. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh no, thank you. I'm pleased. Thank you. It was fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man.